Good morning. It is Tuesday, September 23rd, and day two of consistently doing this podcast. That might be it for the week. No, I'm really going to go for it. Today, the newest thing that was in the interwebs is that yesterday, Trump and RFK Jr. announced that acetaminophen could be the cause of autism, that there's a correlation between its use during pregnancy and the rise in autism. I haven't looked at any of the studies, and I know the studies that they looked at to make this claim are older. I don't believe that there have been new studies. What I did read was that there's a lot of nuance, and I hate using that word, but in the way the studies are described, as in they say things like, there's been no reputable study that proves this, you know, so there's a correlation for sure. Other than that, I don't know. I took acetaminophen when I was pregnant because that's what we were told to take. But when I was growing up, you know, the wokelings, the white liberal women are getting, they're losing their mind over this because what they're saying is Tylenol has been around since the 50s and the increase in autism didn't start showing up until the 80s or 90s even. And that's probably correct. I did a quick Google search, and Tylenol has been around since, I think, 1950 is when the patent was gotten for it. It was a prescription drug, and then it became available over the counter. I don't remember. I want to say in the 60s. The thing is, you know, these things take some time to get into the market. So when I was growing up, we took aspirin. Kids took aspirin. They made baby aspirin. And that's what you take now. Adults do because it's low dose. But it was flavored. I think it was cherry flavored, maybe bubblegum flavored. They probably had a couple different flavors and it was chewable. And we'd eat it like candy. I remember going over to my best friend's house and was like, oh, you want some baby aspirin? Sure. And this was, you know, mid 70s. Tylenol then became, you know, the correlation between Reye's syndrome and aspirin was a thing when probably in the mid to late 70s. That's when I first heard about it. And we were cautioned about taking baby aspirin or any aspirin. If you were a child under at the time, I want to say it was 12, but then they raised it to 19. And Tylenol was pushed for those, for any sort of fever, pain relief, that sort of thing. And my mom took a ton of Tylenol. She took it she took the maximum dose and probably more than that. I think if I recall correctly, because she couldn't take aspirin, it was causing her too much stomach issues. And, you know, if she were to get a cut based on that amount of aspirin, she'd probably bleed out. So she took Tylenol, and she took extra strength Tylenol. She probably took 12 a day. And she was surprisingly fine. Her liver and all of that were fine. And she drank quite a bit, too. That's neither here nor there. All I'm saying is that we switched over to Tylenol mid-70s. It wasn't until 1980 when the CDC made, you know, this coral or started making PSAs about not giving aspirin to your kids. So there was a delay in Tylenol might have been available, but there was a big delay into getting it into people's medicine cabinet. So, you know, schools would often, you know, if you had a headache or a fever, they'd give you Tylenol. I mean, I'm sorry, they'd give you aspirin first and then Tylenol later. So, and then they just stopped. Now you had to get it from your parents and then it had to go through you know, you have to lock it up now with the schools and all that. Like, they didn't keep medication on hand anymore at schools. And that's probably a good thing for a variety of reasons. Just so that your parents would know what you were taking. Anyway, so that was my point, is that, you know, it takes a while for any changes to get into mainstream. So to say that Tylenol wasn't, or, you know, the increase in autism didn't happen right away when Tylenol entered the market doesn't mean a whole lot. It takes some time to make it into everybody's medicine cabinet. That said, and I'm not saying that Tylenol is the cause of autism. I don't know what it is. I think it's probably a multitude of things that has increased. I think part of it is the spectrum has just gotten so much bigger, and diagnoses are different. You know, how they do the diagnosis is different. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. And I think it's important to look into all of these. Like, all questions should be available or should be asked. We should check this stuff out. There was a time when doctors prescribed thalidomide to pregnant women. And after the babies were born with, you know, missing limbs and whatnot, they decided, oh, maybe that's not the best thing to do. We used to do lobotomies. Doctors make mistakes, and big pharma gets involved too. You know, they push things on doctors. Doctors assume that they've done their research. So there's a lot of moving parts. And, you know, I remember I was put on Repatha. I have high cholesterol due to my thyroid condition, and it's just a family history of high cholesterol. And I struggle with this because I know that, I don't know that necessarily taking the medications is a good thing, and that's neither here nor there. And I've done a lot of research on it. I don't know the answer, and I'm not giving any medical advice. So please don't take any of this as medical advice. But I was told to take this medication. It's an injection, and I did not want to take it. It terrified me. I got the prescription filled, and then I did not want to take it because I didn't want to put anything into my body. I remember mentioning this to my eye doctor, who had studied under my dad was also an ophthalmologist, and this other ophthalmologist took over my dad's practice. So he was a mentor, or he had been mentored by my father. So he was somebody that I had a fair amount of trust in. And I remember asking him or mentioning it to him, and he kind of laughed. He's like, well, why would you be afraid to take it? And I said, you know, it's fairly new to the market. It's only been on, you know, it's only been available for, I think at that point, 2 or 3 years. And I'm just, you know, hesitant to take it. And he had apparently done quite a bit of research in it and on the medication. And don't tell me that there's horrible things wrong with it. I've been on it for a few years and I've had no problem, and it has done its job. And I have had no side effects. But my concern was, growing up, you know, there have been multiple medications that have been put out there. And after, you know, 5, 6 years, they discovered that there is a problem with it. What was the one? There was a diet medication, I want to say Fen-Phen or something like that. It was like a two different kinds of meds that you took together. And I never took it, but it was pulled from the market because I believe it caused heart issues. So we learn and we adjust. So I think that's how medicine should be done. And maybe Tylenol has been considered safe for a lot longer, though my understanding is that these studies have been out there for a while. And again, do your own research. I'm not making any, don't listen to me about what to take or what not to take. Talk to your doctor. But all I'm saying is that doctors have made mistakes. Putting anything into your body, you know, there are risks involved. And for some people, there won't be any risk. So, and the question is, how do you know who? I remember I was not a good student by any stretch of the imagination. I was one of those kids who, I never got my stuff in on time. I didn't study for tests. I wasn't stupid. I just didn't have a home life that was conducive to, you know, studying. I'd get home from school and my mom would take a nap every afternoon between 3:30 and 6:30 when my dad got home. And so that was kind of like my chilling out time. I would do my chores and then, basically camp out in front of the TV with a bowl of cereal. And then, you know, once she woke up, I'd have to get her up and get her downstairs and all that sort of thing. And homework was just never made a priority for me. And it should have been, but I didn't do it. I was not a disciplined 6-year-old by any stretch of the imagination. So anyway, I was not a great student. And I went to a very good school. So it's still, the information still got in, probably just by, you know, rote and by just overexposure to it. But it wasn't because I was studying. I don't know why I said all that. But anyway, I recall one lesson, and it was probably in our earth science class or something. And the teacher was talking about how, you know, any environment that you introduce something new to, whether it's a new animal or a new plant or I don't know what, anything that you introduce something new to an environment, it alters the environment. And it doesn't matter the intention. You might want to be doing good things to it. It's still going to have, you know, there's always cause and effect. And I can't remember the examples they gave, but, you know, there was like, if you, you know, add, well, I guess what a good example would be the mussels that are in the lakes now. They're a invasive species. They got on the boats, and then the boats would go from one lake to another, and then they spread that way. And, you know, everything has there's a cause and effect to everything. And so we know this. And good or bad, things, adding something new to your body is going to have an impact on other aspects of your health. It might be great. Like, what are some of the injectable diet medications? You know, you keep reading how they protect your heart, and they do other, you know, they stop addictive behaviors, or not stop, but they reduce them. I mean, I'm reading good stuff about them, and I'm sure there's bad stuff about them too. But it's fascinating. Anyway, I don't like, the older I get, the fewer drugs I want to take. Just because, especially with COVID, I just didn't trust the whole, it was too fast, you know, like the warp speed of getting the vaccine out there. It was just, in my mind, it was too fast. So I was hesitant. I took it because I had to, but I didn't really want to. And I kind of regret that I did. I won't get boosters. And again, I'm not giving any advice. You got to do what's best for you. This is just what was best for me. So that said, you know, because it's been so politicized, now you've got the wokelings over on TikTok and Instagram, and they're chugging Tylenol. And we know Tylenol can be toxic in higher doses. It can do all kinds of problems to your liver, especially if you drink. So it's like, what is wrong with people that they think, oh, I'm so mad at Trump that I'm going to take gobs and gobs of Tylenol? I mean, it's like the Tide Pod thing, except they're not children. So it's so ridiculous. I'm currently reading a book by Scott Adams, and he's the guy who does Dilbert. If you don't follow him, you should. He's quite interesting and fascinating. And his books are excellent. They just really, he's a master of persuasion, and I think that's what's missing in a lot of these arguments going back and forth of right or left. It's that there's no persuasion left. But the book Loser Think is about how, you know, we kind of get stuck in our bubbles and we need to be more open-minded. And it's a way to be more open-minded and to ask questions. I mean, you know, the more questions we ask, the better. They might be, you know, you might be able to, I don't want to say stupid questions because there are no stupid questions, but obviously there are. But more questions is better than no questions and fewer questions. So we should keep an open mind about all of this stuff. It's a great book. Loser Think it's fascinating. He has other books, I think, with Bigley and How to Fail at Everything or something like that. They're all great. I highly recommend them. They will change your life. And that's not hyperbolic. That's the truth. So go out and get Scott Adams' books. But so yeah, they're over there chugging Tylenol, and it's just ridiculous. It's like nope, we don't want to clean up crime. We don't want to close the borders. We don't want to lower, you know, the cost of whatever it is, gas, or it's just I don't know. It gets frustrating, as I'm sure you all are aware. So I don't know where we stand on. I actually, while I was reading this stuff online, there was somebody posted about her, I don't know, niece or something. They were trying to have a baby, and it was, she didn't, she was keeping her mouth shut as her aunt, you know, she's like, she didn't ask me, so I wasn't going to give her anything. But she finally asked me, you know, if she knew anything. Basically, the old wives, crones, asking older women and men about their experiences is not a bad thing. Sometimes we know stuff. And in this situation, the woman advised her niece, who was having fertility issues, she suggested to swap out her polyester athleisure for cotton. So instead of wearing, you know, I don't know, whatever polyester or synthetic fabrics, that she should go with more linen or cotton, more natural fabrics. And she did, and she got pregnant right away, you know, after 6 months. And apparently, this is all news to me. There have been studies done about this very thing, and I don't know what, I haven't had a chance to look into it, but there's something about the synthetic fabrics that, like, the static it creates around your genitals is an issue. I don't know why, but I am going to look into it. But I think it's fascinating. So sometimes the easiest, and maybe it's not the easiest thing, but the thing that we wouldn't even consider is might even be a solution. And maybe that isn't, you know, cause and effect and all that. Maybe that isn't the reason necessarily, but it worked for them. So I think it's always great to keep an open mind. I am a huge believer in the placebo effect as well. So that used to be a bigger thing. And again, as you know, my mother took a lot of medication, and we would give her placebos because sometimes she just couldn't take other stuff. But she was incredibly suggestible, and if you gave her a sugar pill or something that was innocuous and told her that it was doing something else, it would do the something else. So the placebo effect is incredibly powerful. Even there's been studies that show even when you know you're being part of the placebo, when you're taking the placebo, it still works. So, you know, mind over matter is fascinating. And speaking of that, I'm also reading the new Dan Brown book, which is kind of talking about this. I think I'm only about 50 pages into it. But our mind is powerful. And we also know that our gut is in charge of a lot of this stuff going on that we used to attribute to our brain. Just an open mind is really important. That's about all I've got to say. I think we'd all be better off if we closed our mouths a little bit more and opened our mind. I think there's something about a parachute in there. And I say that unironically, as I've been talking for, I don't know, 20 minutes now about absolutely nothing that I know anything about. So anyway, that's the deal. There isn't, you know, we used to do, I'm sorry, my dog is right here and she wants all the attention because I'm talking, and that's why I'm distracted and you're hearing me scratching her butt. So anyway, that is it for today. Go do your research before you start chugging Tylenol or acetaminophen or any medication for that matter. I think, you know, everything in moderation. So, have a great day. I will talk to you tomorrow.